Okay, we begin a new sugya, but it's really coming off the heels of last sugya. Last sugya, we spoke a lot about the principle of smuchin, as to when it applies, when it doesn't apply, what the nature of smuchin is. We spoke about the machlokes Rambam and the Rishonim, is it in the Psach, in the Gavra, how it applies potentially to Geirus, doesn't apply to Geirus. Now we move on to the next part of the really sugya b'fin atzma about smuchin. And of course, we're learning the whole sugya of smuchin because that's what appears to base, or base of Gimel and Alpha said, the Gemara discusses the requirement, or sometimes lack thereof, of smuchin for Dinei Torah. And it's, I always consider it to be perhaps one of the most fascinating halachic slash historical machleks in the history of Jewish people. And that's the notion of chiddush ha-smicha. The notion of smicha, as we've said already many times, is an unbroken chain of tradition that was broken. And the question is, can we restart again? Is there a way to fix it? Or do we say it is broken until somehow we have some special siyat d'shmaya from above to restart it? Or is it something we can actually do to begin this process again? So this sugya appears, really starts in the first parak of Masechet Nedarim, not the daf that we're learning. We're going to learn it now because it's part of our general discussion of smuchin. The sugya really begins at daf Yudal and Aleph in Masechet Nedarim, so we'll jump ahead a little bit. We can tell everybody we learned 14 blot tonight, so on daf Yudal and Aleph, the Gemara has the following statements about first one lies the Kiblu. It's approximately a third of the way down in the page, Yudal and Aleph. Amr Yishuv and Levi. The first one lies with Kiblu. So Amr Yishuv and Levi. Ain smicha b'chutzlorts. Smicha doesn't apply in chutzlorts. Why ain smicha? What does that mean? Ilema delo dine dine knosses klal b'chutzlorts. Does that mean that those areas of halacha that require smicha cannot be judged in chutzlorts? Now we know that knossos, penalties, are kefel, dalbei, and some other things of that nature, Akinosos, they require smuchin. So is that what the Gemara means to say? That's what Meshuvah Levi meant to say, that you can't have dine knossos in chutzlor. It's not true. But Tanan Sanhedrin, no heges ben baritz, ben chutzlor. The Sanhedrin is no here. It doesn't mean the Sanhedrin agol. It means this zeriktara. It means a basin of 23. You can even judge dine nefashos in chutzlor. The Gemara derives this from Sukkim at the end of the Sefer Midbar. You could judge even dine nefashos in chutzlor, provided that there's a Sanhedrin functioning in Eretz Yisrael. When you have the Beis HaMikdash, there's a functioning Sanhedrin in Eretz Yisrael, then you can have small abote dinim, even in Chutz Loretz. So what did Rabbi Shuban Levi mean when he said the Ein Smich Chutz? Ela de lo sam chinan b'chutz loretz. What it means is that you're not allowed to confer smicha in Chutz Loretz. Smicha is limited to Eretz Yisrael. Why that should be so? We'll talk about it as the circuit continues. But a kopon in the Gemara is very, very clear that the process of smicha cannot be done in Chutz Loretz. And the Gemara goes on to elaborate and tell the stories about this. Different people who lived in Bavel that came to Eretz Yisrael to receive smicha. Some did succeed, some didn't succeed in getting smicha, etc. But the smicha process, no question whatsoever, is limited to Eretz Yisrael. Again, why that should be so? What is it about Eretz Yisrael that lends itself to smicha process? This is not a mitzvah tzuli bar. This is not shemit and drums and meisers. So we'll have to see, hopefully, as the sugya develops. But that's a chalik l'yavar. Of course, it is because of this that this basically led to the demise of smicha in the period of time when the Jewish community in Eretz Yisrael pretty much came, not a complete end, but a close to a complete end. We've already said this many times in Halach and History Shurim, that the bottom line is, after Churban Bayis Sheni, there was still a thriving Jewish community left in Eretz Yisrael, not in the south, not in the Yerushalayim area, it was transferred pretty much to the north. We know that's where the Beis and Agudal eventually made its way up to Tveria, in that area of Eretz Yisrael, and Rabbi Yudah Nossi and the Mishnayos, and that was that period, the early Amoraim, the Rishalmi, but soon afterwards, so things did not go very well. Most of the problem, well, the ultimate problem was the fact that the Roman Empire decided to adopt Christianity, which wasn't very good for the Jews, to say the least. And then slowly but surely, the Jewish community in Eretz Yisrael pretty much came to just about an almost end, and Bavel, of course, was carried the day. So one of the downsides of when you don't have a thriving Jewish community enough to be a chum in Eretz Yisrael is that smicha is going to come to an end, which is exactly what happened. And Lamai said around the same time in history, about the time the later Amoraim in Bavel, there was no smuchin whatsoever. And obviously there hasn't been smuchin for 1600, 700 years since then. And the question arises, is there any way, shape, or form to start it over again? So the chur, the answer is no. The answer is not even up for discussion. So the whole definition of smicha means, the Gemara says, Ishri, Pisha, Meisha, if it's broken, finished. So the Rambam has a comment in the Perashat Mishnayos. So originally, I thought we'd read the Perashat Mishnayos inside, and then I hesitated for two reasons. Number one, a lot of people have small gemaras on Perashat Mishnayos, and then my eyes have been bothering me the last couple of days, so I'm not even going to begin to strain the Perashat Mishnayos. I think those Russian and those have just done me in the last couple of days, so we'll just we'll save this Papa Tosha. Those who are interested can read the whole Perashat Mishnayos and Rambam. We'll read part of the Mishnah Torah, but the Rambam elaborates on the Perashat Mishnayos. The Perashat Mishnayos, so the Rambam quotes a very, very fascinating source that leads us to believe that smicha can be restarted. It's a pasuk from Navi. V'yashiva shoftayich k'rishona. We pretty much paraphrase that every day in Adav. V'yashiva shoftayich k'rishona. V'yashiva shoftayich k'rishona. V'yotayich k'vachila. V'achreichein yikarei loch ir hatzedek kirya. Something like whatever. From the show, yeah, from Shabbos Chazon. So the Rambam observes in this pasuk that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises us through the Navi Yishayahu Shiva Shoftach Rishana. That the Shoftim are going to come back. What do you mean Shoftim? We have Shoftim. We have DNA Torah today. We have the Beis Din of America. But they didn't. So obviously, when the Navi says Shiva Shoftach Rishana means the real Shoftim, the real Dayanim, the Smuchin, not this like, you know, half baked Shnichusaya kind of stuff that we were talking about in the last couple of weeks. The real McCoy, the real Dayanim Smuchin. Wait a second, says the Rambam. What's going to be the state of the Baram? Veshiva Shoftach Rishana, Yotzach Vechila. And then eventually, we're going to build the base of Mikdash. It sounds like sometime before the Geula reaches its completion, there's going to be a period of time where Shiva Shoftach Rishona. So the Rambam says, how is that going to happen? What mechanism is available for us for that Nevuah to be fulfilled? It's a Lomda Shekasha Nevuah. That's what the Rambam poses the challenge in Perashat Mishnayos. So the Rambam says, linked in this Nevuah is the assumption that there has to be some kind of a procedure that could work. Something. What it is? I don't know yet, but there must be some kind of a process to reinstitute smicha, and it has to be something, the Rambam says, which makes sense in the world of halacha. And then the Rambam goes on to assume it's not something supernatural, it's not something we're going to have, smicha's going to come fall out of a cloud from heaven. The Rambam doesn't view that as a possibility. If the Navi promises us smicha's going to come back, then it has to come back. V'derech ha-teva. So why is the Rambam so convinced that it has to happen that way? Maybe it'll come down. Maybe, I don't know, Moshe Rabbeinu is going to come down. Tchis HaReisim. And again, all kind of interesting ways that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can make it. So this is probably part of the Rambam's general approach to the whole Gula lesson level. The Rambam has, we already have a Rambam, I told you to bring Rambam's Shoftim for multiple reasons. Im Kfar Askba, we already have a Rambam's different Shoftim. So let's take a look very, very quickly at the Rambam's presentation of the basic tzura of Yemos HaMashiach. Now, the Rambam himself tells you, very, very clearly that we don't know all the details of Yemos HaMashiach. Nobody knows all the details. The Rambam says even the Nevi'im themselves weren't privy to all the nuances of Yemos HaMashiach. But we were given a little bit of it, enough to make it into one of the Kori Hamunah. The Rambam says, if you don't believe in Yemos HaMashiach, but klal, so then you're a kofa b'Torah. And as there are psukim in Chumash that refer to Yemos HaMashiach, many, many psukim in Navi that refer to Yemos HaMashiach. So the basic Amunah Shleim in Yemos HaMashiach is something which is of paramount importance. The details, the Rambam says, you know, stay tuned. We don't have the details. But one thing the Rambam does insist upon, which not everyone agrees to, if you take a look at the very last Rambam, last parak in the Rambam, Parak Yud Beis Halacha Aleph. The very, very last Rambam's parak in Mishnah Torah. Al Yala Al Halev. Don't think of the following. Don't let this idea cross your heart. Should be a Moshe Mashiach Yevatel Dovim and Hava Shalolim. That anything from the regular, normal way of the world is going to change. Or if you think that all of a sudden the rules of nature are going to change, there's going to be the periodic table of elements is going to cease to exist, that a new set of elements are coming in, gravity is going to stop, the world is going to turn upside down in terms of physical things, it's not going to happen, says the Rambam. It's going to be the same biology, the same chemistry, the same physics, the same astronomy, everything's going to be the same. The world is going to be pretty much the same naturally. I possession never be a shy of a guy as the Avim Keves, the number of the yearbuts. I but there are psukim Navi that don't seem to bear this out. The psukim Navi that describe changes in the psyche of the animal world. That all of a sudden, what used to be a wolf, what used to be a lion, used to be things that would generally eat sheep and goats, and all of a sudden they're going to be best friends. That's a change. I mean, that's a change in the world of veterinary psychology, whatever you want to call it. So says the Rambam, no. says those psukim should not be understood literally. Mashal v'chida, those are derech mashal. Inyan adavashu Yisrael yoshim levetach mishia oylam amshulim kizei v'chen hamer. It doesn't mean that the literal wolves are going to stop eating the sheep. They're going to still eat the sheep if they're bumping the sheep. It means that the goyim, the rishoyim in this world are going to stop bothering us. V'yachzu kul v'das emes, v'lo yigzolu, v'lo yashchisu, etc., etc. And the Ram continues, v'ayek abacha yachol tevin, v'chulei. And the Ram goes to every single one of these nevuas and says, it's all going to be olam kivin havanoi. That's the thrust of the Rambam. There is a fascinating comment of the Raibit on this Rambam, where the Raibit is part of the group of Rishon who disagrees, who says that there is going to be a shini in Teva. The Raibit says, what do you mean? Amar Avraham v'lo kosev b'torah v'shbati chayi ram in aretz. There's a pasuk in Chumash that says, Kosh Baruch Hu will remove the wild animals. There won't be any more wild animals. All the wild animals are going to be nice and tame. So the lions, tigers, and bears are going to be very, very friendly all of a sudden. So says the Raibit, that's chashini in Teva, v'shbati chayi ram in aretz. To which the Ram would most probably respond, that's also derech Moshe Bechida. So somehow the Raivin was willing to buy into the Rambam's Moshe Bechida for Navi, but the Chumash somehow he didn't think it should be interpreted that way. So it's a fascinating Machlokes Rambam Raivin, not for now. So probably because the Rambam had this image, this vision of Yemos Mashiach as wonderful times, the Rambam goes on to elaborate about why we've been waiting for Yemos Mashiach. Don't make light of it, says the Rambam. It's unbelievable. This is it. This is the Yesoda, Yesodas. It's Veikari Amunah. It's going to be a wonderful time. Oh, there's Hashem. He signs off about Lo Nisavu Alcham Anavim. It's great and wonderful. Still natural. Which is probably what prompted the Rambam in Perisha Mishnah is to raise this challenge. How in the world are we going to have the Yom Smuchim? We have to figure out how to do it on our own. We can't wait for no dying Samach is falling down from heaven. So unlike the Rambam, there are other Rishonim who responded and said, no, but the answer to the challenge of the Rambam is it'll be something supernatural. How's it going to happen? I have no idea. It'll be Eliyanov, it'll be Moshe Rabbeinu, it'll be somebody. I don't know. I have no idea who's going to be that magic Samach. Yeah, that's also part. It's also part of the picture. Right. So other Rishonim had less challenge to this problem. Other Rishonim said, well, we're not going to try to use our imagination what's going to happen. Something's going to happen. Something very, very strange is going to happen. And don't bother me with lit v'shuv, it's not at the shakashas. That's what the other Rishonim say. And the Rambam said, no, I'm going to chop you with the lit v'shuv, it's not at the shakasha. It's got to work with fi derech ha-teva. If it doesn't work with fi derech ha-teva, it's not going to work. So now the Rambam has to rise to the challenge of what is derech ha-teva. So the Rambam, both in Perishim Mishnah and Mishnah Torah, says it. So let's take a look at it in Mishnah Torah, the Prince Birgur Mishnah Torah. Let's take a look at the Rambam in Perek Dal and Hukha Sanhedrin. Perek Dal and Hukha Yad Aleph. Perek Dal and Hukha Yad Aleph. It's in the middle of Hukha Yad Aleph. Nirin li hadvarim. So you already know, whenever the Rambam says Nirin li, Yirah li, you know it's down in the Gemara. That's already a dead giveaway, that's down in the Gemara. The Rambam is saying, you think it's all this in themselves. Nirin li hadvarim. If all the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael agree together, limnos dayonim, to begin to appoint dayonim, v'lismochosan, and to give smicha. Who are all these dayonim in Eretz Yisrael? Who are these Chachamim? They're not dayonim themselves. If they're smuchim themselves, what do I need them all to get together and have a convention for? He said one could just give smicha to somebody else. The Rambam is describing that there are none left. None of them are smuchim. They can join forces, and all of a sudden, hopeless purpose, habeilu smuchim. V'yeshlam lodun dine k'nasas. V'yeshlam nesmuch le'acheru. As long as you have the haskam of notice, the Lashon Rambam, kol ha'chachom shebe'eretz Yisrael. We'll see a little bit later what the significance of that Lashon is. Kol ha'chachom shebe'eretz Yisrael, but they all agree, they could start the smicha process over again. So now the Rambam poses a historical halachic question. Imkein, lama hayu chacham mitzitarin ala smicha? Kadesh lo yivat lo dine kadosus b'Yisrael. Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin tells about there are some Tanaim who lost their life over this. Rebbeinu ben Bava got killed because he tried to give smicha to his Talmidim against the Roman laws. So why were they being mitzitarin about this? The Gemara says because they had to keep dine kadosus going. They had to keep dine mamonos going. They had to keep the shashalos alive. What's the big deal? If there's a way to fix it later on, why does Rebbeinu Bava have to die for this? So let him close up the yeshiva. They'll stop the chagas smicha. Stop giving smicha. And 20 years from now, when the Romans get busy with some other war somewhere else in the world, we'll dig out around Hilchas Sanhedrin. We'll start the whole thing off. What's the big deal? So the Rambam says, if I'm right, so then why would the Torah make such a fuss about it? The Rambam says a very pragmatic reason. Rebbeinu ben Bava, his colleagues, the Tanoim, knew that this process works, but it's very, very hard to implement. Because you have to get everybody together. Lo pashut. But whereas if you have someone who has the original smicha, he doesn't need to confirm with everybody else. So the Rambam says that the emissaries are right, says the Rambam. I have to be right because it's a state in the pasuk. Here the Rambam doesn't quote the pasuk in the Sheyah, but in the Sheyah he does. So we have to have comfort with the theory. This is my theory. I admit it's not a Gemara. And I'm not bothered with the kasha. So Imkein, why did the Torah make such a fuss about losing smicha? And then the Rambam signs off something very, very uncharacteristic of the Rambam. I can't say I read every Rambam, but I don't remember another Rambam like this. You have to think a lot about this, says the Rambam. The Rambam usually does not. Usually the Rambam is pretty clear. If he says something, he believes that it's true without any hesitation. And here the Rambam almost backpedals and says, you have to think about this a lot. And if you give me a chriya, then I'm right. Zol zayin. And if not, so then we'll discuss it. Adkan Dever Rambam. So before we get to all those who disagree with the Rambam, I want to just begin to understand some of the conditions that the Rambam presented and what this basic picture that's emanating from the Rambam is all about. So the Rambam almost like created a halachic category called Hiskimu Kol HaChachamim. The second part, Eretz Yisrael, we'll leave Eretz Yisrael for a second. Hiskimu Kol HaChachamim. What does that mean? What do those words mean? I mean, I know what they mean. Everybody signs off to the same. We all agree to appoint him as the chief rabbi. Well, what is that? What kind of halachic concept is that? Hiskimu Kol HaChachamim. A very, very strange idea. So the Chora, what the Rambam is driving at is another theme that the Rambam expresses in another place. He actually expressed it more explicitly in his introduction to Mishneh Torah. We went from the introduction to Mishneh Torah to the last bracha of Mishneh Torah and everything in between. In the introduction to Mishneh Torah, the Rambam describes a very, very important halachic, historic event. We spoke a lot about this last year on the Friday night shiurim. It was a halachic historic event that pretty much dictates our halachic observance ad hayom hazeh. And the Rambam picks upon what we call chasimas Talmud Bavli, the completion of Talmud Bavli. Now again, what did that mean? Is that there was an official one morning that everybody woke up and said, okay guys, article's ready for the publication, it's out. Or it probably happened over a little bit of time, Chasimus Talmud Bavli. The Gemara itself talks about that there were actually two different people involved in Chasimus Talmud Bavli. The Gemara speaks about Ravina and Ravashi in the end of Maseches Bar Mitzvah. And then in the Igeres of Shur Yagon speaks about those who edited it, the Rabban and Savaroy, the next generation or two. So again, Chasimus Talmud Bavli was not probably like 1 second. It was a process. But there reached a point in time where there was a clear end of a tekufa called the end of Talmud Bavli. And the Rambam says that was very, very important. Because, says the Rambam, anything that made it till that point becomes normative halacha, and we cannot sit around in Cairo 500 years later or in Bergenfield 1500 years later and question. That's it. The game is over. That's the phrase that the Gemara uses in Maseches Bava Metzia, Ravina Ravashi, Sof Hara Ninu. That was the end of Halacha. That was the end of Psach Halacha. It doesn't mean nobody's passing Shalos today. It means you can't argue with the Psach Halacha of Ravina Ravashi. You have no right to say, wait a second, I have an alternate pshat in that Mishnah, and according to my Shtickle Torah, the Mishnah comes out of different Halacha, and therefore, Ein L'chol Shav V'Shuvi Amecha, follow me. So that's out of the question. Ravina Ravashi, Sof Hara Ninu. That's what the Vilna Gaon writes. It's that Gemara that ultimately is the source for this idea. And this is Nimrod of Gump, this is understood, this is self-evident. Anyone who ever learned anything realizes right away that something very, very significant happened at that moment in history of whatever, again, not that moment, not that day, not that week, not that month or the year, but the period of time when Talmud Bavli came to an end. And the Rambam writes in his Hakdamah to Mishneh Torah that there was a very, very important difference in halacha post-Talmud Bavli versus pre-Talmud Bavli. Says the Rambam, let's say 300 years after Talmud Bavli, a group of Chachamim get together and say, you know, we think that this is a really, really good idea. We should make the following gezeirah. They have the courage to do that. And you know who has to listen to them? Their Tamidim, their Balbatim, their shuls, their communities. If the Chachmei Hamokom decide that this is a very, very good idea and we, with the power invested in us as the Rabbanim in this town, we think everyone has to follow us, then the din is everyone has to follow what the Rabbanim of that town say. What about the other town? What about the other country? the other name, not mechuyif to your psachim. Says the Rambam, we find this in practice. We know, says the Rambam, that there were certain communities in the 1000s and the 1100s and the 800s that instituted certain things. Those communities accepted them. Other communities didn't. Just a few easy examples for us. And more obvious examples. There was the Chayim Derben and Gershim. Multiple Chayim Derben and Gershim that was accepted in Ashkenazi communities. By and large, were not accepted in many, many of the Sephardi communities. There was a minig that was accepted in the Ashkenazi communities, not to partake of kitnias and Pesach, wasn't accepted in most of the Sephardi communities. Kohenu v'chayna, you had gezeiros and mitzyogim and minhogim in different communities. Says the Rambam, that's perfectly legitimate, that's perfectly okay. We have rules that you're supposed to follow minhogim and mokom. Those are sugyas that appear in the fourth paragraph of Maseches Pesachim. So if you're part of a certain community, you're supposed to follow the minhogim of that particular community. Says the Rambam, if I'm not from that community, these are not my Rabbanim, it's not my Rabbeim, so what does that do with me? Says the Rambam, no Jewish community in the world today has a right to say, I'm not from Babylonia. I never lived in Sura and Pumbadisa. I grew up in Tinek. What do they have to do with me? What do I have to listen to their psalm for? I'll ask my rabbi. My rabbi who grew up in Tinek will tell me what to do. The Rambam says, forget it. That's not acceptable. That doesn't work. Anything that was a nimn of a government that made it into Talmud Bavli is binding on all of Klal Yisrael. Anything post-Talmud Bavli goes community by community. Where did that come from? Well, what kind of halach is that? What kind of halachic statement is that? So the Rambam pretty much says it. The Rebbe Chaim Wasserman elaborates a little bit upon it. The Rav had it in a little bit of a different context, a little bit of a different, explaining a different Rambam, but it's all basically pointing in the same direction. That there is a halachic concept called Kol Chachmei Yisrael, or if you don't want to get Kol because it's hard to get everybody, Rov Chachmei Yisrael, we'll call it Rov Chachmei Yisrael. That is a halachic principle, something that's agreed upon by the majority of the Talmid Chacham in the world. That is a halachic concept. What kind of halachic concept is that? So Rabbi Chanan explains, based on the Lashonis and the Rambam, and the Rav said pretty much the same idea, a little bit of a different aspect. The Sanhedrin was not Kol Chachmei Yisrael, it was the representatives of the Chachmei Yisrael. In theory, I think I've given this motion before, in theory, in a perfect democracy, so anytime there's a law up for grabs, anytime they want to pass a bill, wants to pass a law, so everybody should vote. Let's say they want to raise the speed limit to, I don't know, what is it now? I'm not sure, what's the national speed limit? Whatever it is. They want to raise it by 5 miles, want to make it 80 miles an hour, whatever it is. So every single person in the United States of America should get a vote. That is we, the people, the government body, the people, for the people, love the people. That is Pshuta Kibbishmo democracy. That is a recipe for absolute chaos. It's not going to work. So I'm sure this was the founding fathers' chiddush. This is already back probably from the days of Athens and Greece. But the basic idea being called representative democracy. It's not shayach to have every single person vote on every single thing. But what you can do is you can have representatives from Kamosa. I'll appoint a representative. He's not going to call me every time there's a vote, but he's going to try to vote. He's going to try to look after his constituency. So he's going to vote on behalf of his island, of his people. Is it going to be perfect? No, but they say that I think I've forgotten the phrase was that out of all the imperfect forms of government, democracy is the least imperfect. Something along those lines. So this is like the least imperfect form of democracy. To have a referendum on changing the speed limit on Windsor Road is not going to work. But you have representative democracy. That's pretty much what's happening. So l'hadlof of dollars in psach halacha, every shaila should really go for a vote. To who? Lo b'shemayimi. Who should vote? Talmid Chacham should vote. Ki pol milchadol mishpat. So everyone should have a vote. Everyone's a bar hachi. Again, if a person doesn't know the sugya, doesn't know what he's voting on, so it's not going to count. But anyone who's a bar hachi, gil ha-ra, all the ziknei hador, gil ha-ra, should vote in, should weigh in on every single shayla that comes up. So the Torah Kedosh said, it's not going to work. So we'll put up 71 people, and they're the reverend. Now again, it's not exactly the amount. You don't get voted into the Sanhedrin. You get appointed by the last Sanhedrin, appointed by the last Sanhedrin, and eventually back to Moshe Rabbeinu. But the idea is the same, that the Sanhedrin are the quote-unquote representatives of the Chachmei HaTorah in each and every generation. Every once in a while, you have a very, very difficult situation where that system breaks down. There are no representatives, and the Sanhedrin fails to exist. So who has the vote now? So that's what Rabbi Chanan presents, and basically what the Rambam was driving at, and is that dumb at the Mishnah Torah. You know who gets the vote now? The original Chachmei HaTorah get the vote. So now you got to go back to the chaotic version. Instead of having a Sanhedrin that could do things in orderly fashion, you go back to chaos. And everybody gets a vote. The problem is, it's very hard to be machriya. It's very hard to get everybody together. It's hard to, you know. So, but imtum tzalayma, we can come up with some way of determining that this is the rov chachma Yisrael. That is a binding, that is like the kach, Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin is the manifestation of the chachma, of the opinions of rov chachma Yisrael. So if you don't have a formal Sanhedrin, so you go back to the original model, what should have been the original model. So that's what the Rambam writes, that what happened with Bar Chasim and Segumar was nothing magical. It wasn't like one day, all of a sudden, like a Bosco came down for Shemayim and said, okay, guys, now we're writing a Gemara, and now this is the last word in history. No, no, no. The Rambam writes, it's very, very clear what happened. The Rambam writes that Kol Zman, the Talmud Bavli, was still being put together. Rov the Chachmei Hador lived in Bavel. And most of the people, again, the community in Eretz Yisrael was almost completely decimated. The Jewish communities that were starting to crop up, you know, we mentioned the Drusha the other day in Rome, and early Spain, and you had beginnings of Jewish communities, but there was no question that Bavel was the end all. And even those few Rabbanim in other far-flung places turned to the Chachmei Bavel. We know this from the days of the Gaonim. We know this is true. So by the end of the Chasidus HaGemara, the Chachmei Bavel still had pretty much the voice of the overwhelming majority of Chachmei HaTorah. And says, the Rambam, that ceased to exist. By the 900s, by the 1000s, by the 1100s, by the 1200s, that just didn't exist anymore. There was no central force anymore. When there's no way to ascertain what the Rosh Chachmei Yisrael say, so each community on their own. Every once in a while, things develop over the years where you get shilas that come up, and Rosh Chachmei Yisrael end up kind of signing up to it. Say, like the Moshel. There was a raging machlokes in the days of the Gaonim about the Seder Parshas, Rashi against Rabbeinu Tam, way before Rashi was born, way before Rabbeinu Tam was born. But by the days of the later Rishonim, it was already agreed upon. And now Bezman Hazetz agreed upon Nimrim Agamram. So we have a psak of Kol Chachmei Yisrael now saying this is the correct version of Tefillin. So that's Ke'ilu Sanhedrin Paskin. The Shah is over already. The game's over. So once you have a psak of Kol Chachmei Yisrael, Bezman Chachmei Gemara, you had it. After Chachmei Gemara, you very rarely have it. You get it sometimes, but not all that common. So that concept of Kol Chachmei Yisrael seems to be echoing what the Rambam is saying here as well. The Rambam said, I'll tell you what the mechanism to start the Sanhedrin over again is. The mechanism is to go back to the beginning. Moshe Kibbutz Torah said, go back to the original everything. What's everything? What got this whole process starting in the first place? The Torah is given, Lo B'Shemayim, it's given to Klal Yisrael, it's given to the Chachmei Torah, to the Machriya of Shailas, that was from day one. So if Rov Chachmei Yisrael can get the act together, the Rambam said, I'm not saying it's going to be easy, actually I'm telling you it's going to be really hard, but Imtum Tzlam you can. So then you can jumpstart the process again, and that halachic concept of Rov Chachmei Yisrael, Kol Chachmei Yisrael, that halachic process can begin smicha. But notice, the Rambam did not just say Rov Chachmei Yisrael. What did the Rambam say? Sheva Eretz Yisrael. Why do you say that? For a very simple reason. Because smicha has to be in Eretz Yisrael. That's not a part of the sheer of Chachmei Yisrael. Chachmei Yisrael Le'olam should really be determined by what? If most of the Jews in the world, most of the Tamilchim in the world live in Australia, it's always fine. They're in Chachmei Yisrael. So the Rambam here is focusing on Eretz Yisrael because this is a Pradan Uchasmicha. How do we know this is true? That the Eretz Yisrael part is not defining as to who gets a vote in terms of being part of Chachmei Yisrael. So Rabbi Chanan already points out that the Rov Chachmei Yisrael of Talmud Bavli was not in Eretz Yisrael. It actually was in Babylon. It was in Iraq. So, and that's still qualified as Rov Chachmei Yisrael. So when it comes to paskening shailas and Ruchas Shabbos and kashrus and tasa mishpacha and brachas and so in Kol Torah Kula, it doesn't make a difference whether you're in Eretz Yisrael or you're not in Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't matter whether you have smicha or not smicha. If you're a Rov Chachmei Yisrael in Chutz Laaretz, you also can create that block of Rov Chachmei Yisrael. But when you taught me the language of smicha, says the Rambam, because smicha, the Gemara says, ain't subchan al Eretz Yisrael, ki mitzian tzei tesod, v'ashem v'shalayim, whatever the mokha for that is, that ain't subchan al Eretz Yisrael, so be it, so ain't subchan al Eretz Yisrael, so the mail of the Rov Chachmei Yisrael, for this halacha have to be determined by the Rov Chachmei Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael. So the Chori, this is the background, this is the philosophy of the halacha that the Rambam is developing here, that it has to be in Eretz Yisrael, and it has to be kolchach, or rochach, whatever you think the word kol, how literally you think the word kol, whether it means rov or kol, but that's pretty much what's going on in the Shiva Sinan. this idea that Eretz Yisrael is playing such a major role in Smicha, and that's ultimately what resulted in the end of Smicha, and that, according to the Rambam, is part of the recipe for the reinstitution of Smicha. How do we understand this idea of Bechlal? Why is Eretz Yisrael so important for this? I mean, and I'm not minimizing the significance of Eretz Yisrael with that question, but this is not Shemitah, not Shemitah Maisus here. It's not Mitzvah Tluz Baretz. So why, and forget, in terms of Talmud Bavli is even out of Eretz Yisrael. So what is it about Smicha that's so critical that has to be governed afka by Eretz Yisrael? So the Rambam, if you go back to Perek Dalet in Hilchos Sanhedrin, Perek Dalet Halach Vav, the Rambam goes through the details of the requirements of Eretz Yisrael vis-a-vis Smicha. And the end of Halach Vav, the Rambam has the following observation, the very, very end of Perek Dalet Halach Vav. V'chol Eretz Yisrael she'achziku ba'olim Mitzrayim ru'uya l'smicha. All of Eretz Yisrael that was conquered by the Olim Mitzrayim, the days of Shabbanun, is acceptable for smicha. The Rambam here is alluding to what he elaborates upon in the beginning of Hilchos Trumos, based on many, many Gemaras, that there were fundamentally two different sets of borders of Eretz Yisrael. For those who remember from Gittin, from Kol Boker, the first Shia we spoke about this, that the Gemara tells us in a few places that when Yehoshua ben Nun conquered Eretz Yisrael, so they had quite a large conquest. They never quite conquered everything anyway, even in the days of Yehoshua ben Nun, they didn't quite finish the job. But they did do an awful lot, and that was Kedusha Rishayna. Unfortunately, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed a couple hundred years later. Klal Yisrael was sent into Golus. And then there was a second Kedusha in the days of Ezra, which was it was significantly less, both quantitatively and qualitatively. Qualitatively, it didn't have an army to it. There was no real kibush. It was just the yishuv, chazokas. Quantitatively, it was much, much smaller. The boundaries were much, much smaller than they were in Bayis Rishon. And there are halachic significance of that. There are areas, geographic areas, in what we call the overall Eretz Yisrael, that some of them had only Kedusha Rishon, didn't have Kedusha Shnia. It becomes important for Shemitah, becomes important for Tzatzos Baris, becomes important. Possibly for the mitzvah of Yeshiva Aretz, they become important. Again, there are certain nuances in Halacha. It's important to know which part of Eretz Yisrael are we talking about. So the Rambam says that, by the way, when you're talking the language of Smicha, you want to know what constitutes Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't have to be from the more intense, from the smaller version. You don't have to be in Yerushalayim in the outskirts. You don't have to be in Chevron in order to have Smicha. You can have Smicha in places that never saw Kedusha Shniya. They only had Kedusha Rishayna. The Gemara speaks about Beit She'an. Now, whether there's any correlation, living or dead, between the Beit She'an that we have today and the Beit She'an that Chazal talk about, I have absolutely no idea. I do remember, though, that I was driving up to the north, and we stopped in Beit She'an for something, and I think to get like a drink. Stopped in Beit She'an, and then we couldn't. You know, on the rental cars in Israel, when you always have those codes on them. Of course, we didn't remember what the code was. We couldn't start the car again. In 40 minutes, we tracked somebody down for the rent the car there. So we're sitting in the parking lot in Beit She'an trying to figure out how to start the car again. I remember just thinking to myself, this is it. There's no way this is Eretz Yisrael. This is like lost the Hashor Sashchira. This is what the Gemara says, that he tira Beit She'an, that the game's over. Anyway, but I was riding out of Kintai. So for the purpose of the Smicha, you don't need a Yerushalayim. You don't need Hebron. You don't need Tiberi. You don't need the... You can go find a place that only a Kedusha Rishon that's good enough. That's a very, very strange concept, because the Rambam, in the beginning of his Trumas, makes a big influence bar. The Rambam basically says that Kedusha Rishon is Betela, Kedusha Shni is the one that's Kayemis. So if the Rambam's telling you that for Smicha purposes you don't really need Kedusha Shni, what the Rambam's basically telling you, you don't need the Mitzvah Tluz Baretz definition of Eretz Yisrael. So what definition of Eretz Yisrael do you need? Not Mitzvah Tluz Baretz. So this is a throwback we spoke a little bit in Kol Boker. There's a Ramban, and there's some Tamidim Ramban. In the beginning, it says Gittin that developed this idea that there are different borders of Eretz Yisrael. There are actually two different dimensions of Eretz Yisrael. There's Eretz Yisrael in terms of dirt, the mud, the dirt. This dirt is what creates Truman Zemach. This dirt creates Shemitah. The agricultural Eretz Yisrael. And then there are other aspects of Eretz Yisrael. Some Rishonim, the Ramban coined the phrase, it's Chibas Arts. You can have an area where, as all the Chib of Eretz Yisrael, there are some Rishonim will say, you can fulfill the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael even though there's no Truman Zemach Shemitah. Because Shemitah and Shemitah Maizos, those are agricultural mitzvahs, but there's a whole other dimension of Eretz Yisrael. There's nothing to do with agriculture. What is it? It's the Mokom HaShchina, that's it. You want to say it Lomdish, you want to say it's the extension of the Beis HaMikdash, it's the outermost part of the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishnah Maseches Kelim. Yeah. You give a lot of tires as to what it is, but I'll tell you it's not nothing to do with dirt, nothing to do with agriculture. So for the fact that the Rambam is highlighting that the standards of Eretz Yisrael don't even have to meet the standards of Kedusha Shniya, the Rambam is clearly emphasizing, highlighting this idea that Smicha Eretz Yisrael, that connection between the two has nothing to do with Shemitah. Smicha Eretz Yisrael is the other aspect of Eretz Yisrael, whatever you want to call it, Chiba, you want to call it Shechina, you want to call it Mikdash, whatever you want to call it, but don't call it agriculture. So the bottom line is the Rambam's got this grandiose plan. We understand what prompted the Rambam's plan, the Pasuk in Yeshayo. We understand the longness of why the Rambam where got this category of Kol Chach Yisrael from. We understand why the emphasis in Eretz Yisrael. So we're all good to go, except the Rambam told us Hador Tzachach, he's not so sure. And the Rambam put these words on the paper in Mishnah Torah back in the 1100s, and nothing really happened to it for a couple hundred years. Because there weren't that many Jews in Eretz Yisrael joined that period. The Rambam himself actually was one of those people who made it to Eretz Yisrael for a very, very short period of time and didn't succeed and had to go back. He had to leave Eretz Yisrael. We know the Ramban, a couple of years later, came to Eretz Yisrael. And we know from letters, when he sent this famous letter back from Eretz Yisrael back to Spain, there was nothing. They didn't have a minyan. I've said this many, many times over. They didn't have a minyan for the Ramban, for the Yom Nerayim. There was no minyan for Rosh Hashanah. They had to pay. There was a couple of Jews who lived in Shechem at the time. They made a couple of dollars. They gave him a few dollars and said, come so the Ramban should have a minyan Rishalayim. So, we think the Ramban, sure, wow, it must have been people, fighting to buy tickets to get a seat in the Ramban. You can get a whole row. There was nobody there. There was nobody there. But actually, things began to pick up a little bit later in history, just from the historical point of view. One of the big events that actually brought a resurgence of Jews back there, it's always the destruction of Spain. Basically, the Spanish expulsion, many of the Jews who made their way out of Spain, so whole groups of them ended up, many of them ended up in Turkey, another place in Europe, but groups of them ended up eventually in Israel, including Rav Yosef Cairo, who made it a little while to get there. First he went through Turkey, but eventually he also found his way to Eretz Yisrael. And all of a sudden you had beginnings of fairly thriving communities in Eretz Yisrael. There were two major communities in Eretz Yisrael at the time. There was a Jewish community in Tzfat and a Jewish community in Yerushalayim. A group of the Talmid Chacham in Tzfat, why exactly at this time in history they decided to do this is a little bit unclear, but they said this is the time to put the Rambam's Pesach into practice. And the Rosh HaMedabrim at the time was a man named Yaakov Bey Rav. Yaakov Bey Rav, he has a shul named after him in Tzfat today. How it became a Kabach shul, I have no idea, but I don't think he was Kabachi, but he was the Rebbe of the Beis Yosef. He was a later Rebbe of the Beis Yosef, and then Rebbe Amroli, he was one of the later Rebbes of the Beis Yosef in Tzfat. And the Rebbe Yaakov Bey Rav, him and his Talmidim decided we're going to put this Rambam into practice, and they said that we have a thriving Jewish community in Tzfat, maybe a couple hundred people, that was the whole thing, but it doesn't matter how many Jews there were in Germany and in Poland at the time, because the only ones that matter for this is the Chachmei Eretz Yisrael, so they stayed in the Rambam Farish. And therefore, they felt they were the Rov Chachmei Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael, and they voted together, they all joined forces, and they said, we are the representatives of the Rov Chachmei Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael, and we're going to appoint Rav Yaakov Bey Rav to be our leader. He was the senior Rav at the time. We're going to confer smicha upon him, and then he in turn can confer smicha upon us, and we're going to get the smicha process done. And actually, that's what they did. And he, in turn, gave smicha to five talmidim, one of them being Rav Yosef Cairo. Rav Yosef Cairo received the Beis Yosef himself, Shabbat himself, received smicha from the Mari Bei Rav. And then everything broke loose. The Chachmei Yerushalayim heard of this. Again, the communication between Tzfat and Yerushalayim, then probably took a couple of days for the donkeys to make it down. That winding, a lot of things have changed in Israel over the last 800 years, but that winding road up to Tzfat hasn't changed much since Maase Bereishis, so it probably took a while to get up and down that road. And when the Chachmei Yerushalayim got wind of this, they were not happy to say the least. If you want to just get a little bit of an idea, if you take a look at the Radvaz in Halachi and Aleph, the Radvaz writes, beginning of Halachi and Aleph, Aloshim zeh samchu chachmei tzvas. V'hagobol shebehem lismoch smuchin l'adu dini k'nosos. Their greatest leader, he refers to Rabbi Bei Rav, v'lo ola biyodam, by the understatement of history. It didn't work. לפי שהחוכם שהיה בירושלים לא הסכים עמוהם. The person who was the Bar Plukta, my Rav, was the Bar Rabach, Levi ben Chaviv. He was the biggest Tamechach in Shalim at the time. If you notice, I've made this error several times, the Radbaz left out both names. Do you notice? He speaks about the Gobel Shebehem and the Chocham Shebehem. He left out both names. You know why? Because it was still raging. He lived at the time, the Radbaz. So we don't want to put names on things. It was issues, not people. Vishalu was P, but Odi ben Mitzrayim. The Radbaz says, I was the bystander. They turned to Yavakha. I lived in Egypt, says the Radbaz at the time. Later years, the Radbaz moved actually to Eretz Yisrael. But at the time, he was the rabbi in Egypt. So they asked us, they sent us a message to Egypt, V'yaspi chaveirai, v'lo iskamnu. We didn't like this idea. We didn't think it was such a good idea, this smicha story. But niharachti b'yos tshuva levatol daitam. So the Radbaz gives you a kitz and nimritz. First of all, the Rambam himself writes for Davar Tzorech Hechra. And then the Rambam also makes the point, somewhere along the Radbaz probably makes the point that they weren't even the Kol Chachmei Yisrael. We're not even sure they were the Rav Chachmei Yisrael. There were a lot of Tamil Chum in Yerushalayim at the time. It's not exactly clear. Again, I wasn't there. I can't tell you what the numbers were. And then the Radbaz writes that, you're worrying about, towards the end, he writes, you're worried about a Shiva Shoftech Rishona. Yovel yo, b'nei Reuven, asidim lava v'lasas b'chabas b'nei bo melech Mashiach. One of them will be a somuch. Again, these are things that the Rambam wouldn't in mitzvaches do. All kind of different stories. And then he writes that maybe the Rambam himself realized that his riot wasn't so stark. Maybe that's why he concluded by b'dor tzor chechra. And he says, if you want to know the details of this, he said, look what I wrote in the Tshuvik, Ein Kon Makom Laharich. Now, not the place to be Marachon. The bottom line is, as grandiose as the plan was, and as lomdish as the Rambam's whole Agdara was, Lamaisa, it didn't make it to the next generation. One generation, I can't believe it. So we have still not yet seen the Chiddush HaSmicha. So unless somebody else decides that they're going to start up what happened, some other game changer to get the Chiddush HaSmicha. But it's a fascinating...
What was the
Havamina
of
Chachmei
Tzfat, not to include Chachmei Yerushalayim?
Yeah, is that
Chachmei
Yisrael? Yeah, yeah. So they must have understood the Rambam. They knew they were Chachamim in Yerushalayim. They knew they were there. They must have understood the Rambam's call as Lav Dafka, as being Rov, and they probably were of the opinion that they were the Rov Chachmei Eretz Yisrael at the time, and therefore they felt that it's not necessary to have the Chachmei Yerushalayim's input. Did they also suspect that the Chachmei Yerushalayim would veto it, and it would cause? I don't know. Again, it's very hard for me to go back to the pot. I'm not trouble understanding the politics of today. I understand the politics of 59 years. 5 years. I don't know. But the bottom line is, they tried. They tried to put the Pesach around them, and you know, Shemayim somehow Lemaisa never worked. So again, it's a fascinating sugya in itself. It's a sugya that definitely comes on the heels of everything we've been talking about in terms of smicha and the potential attempt to finish a smicha, which Lemaisa never really made it too far in history. Hopefully, that's Shem. The next time, so we'll go back to some of the regular sugyas back to the back in the
section. Kind of a shame, because had they included them in discussions, maybe Tzfat and Yerushalayim would have gotten together and would have succeeded.
It's the road not taken in history. We don't know. We don't know. I don't know. I can't say it or not.
Wasn't there? Consciously.